Thank you very much for that kind introduction. I feel these days that my major claim to fame is being a grandmother, so I always try to add that. So I'm a 64-year-old grandmother, and I'm having the time of my life. I've got a great job, and I want to thank all of you for your part in making that possible. You know, when I was on the campaign trail, I would always say that government has two obligations: to provide good service and to do that as effectively and efficiently as possible. And that's really what we're about. Over the last several months, we've tried to do four things: be fiscally responsible, provide innovative leadership to the county, be as transparent and accountable as we can be, and improve services. So those are our four things: fiscal responsibility, innovative leadership, transparency and accountability, and improved services. Let me begin by talking about fiscal responsibility. So we walked in the door to a $487 million deficit. $487 million. The last time I checked, that's almost $500 million. You could say that the county was in bad fiscal shape, and believe me, the more we got into it, the worse it seemed. In addition, the sales tax increase that was enacted in 2008, I think, had a very negative effect on not only the business climate in the county, but also on our ordinary working families. And residents were displeased with the quality of services that the county was providing. So we had our hands full. The first thing we tried to do is get our fiscal house in order, balancing the budget. When I took office on December 6th, we had already begun our first quarter. The county has a really odd system. It begins its fiscal year December 1st. I don't know any other government entity that does things quite that way. But anyway, so we're in the middle of our first quarters. We're trying to prepare the budget. And, of course, we didn't get much cooperation from our predecessor, so we were kind of at ground zero when I got elected on November 2nd. And we are going to do our best to be sure this year that we have our budget in place before the fiscal year begins. As county board president, I have control over approximately 8% of our $3.1 billion budget. The county is organized in a rather interesting and peculiar way. There's not only the president and the 17 commissioners, the legislative branch, but there are 11 other countywide elected officials. So we elect, you know, the sheriff, the state's attorney, the recorder of deeds. We have two clerks, the clerk of the court and the clerk. We have an assessor. We have three members of the board of review, board of tax review. And I'm missing somebody, the sheriff maybe, chief judge. Anyway, we have 11 countywide elected officials. So while you're the chief executive, you have to deal with 11 other separately elected officials who have their own ideas of their office and their own sense of turf, and it makes managing more difficult and complicated. Let's just put it that way. What I usually say is, when it's not quite herding cats, but in order to get anything done, you have to do a lot of begging, wheedling, and cajoling. Despite the challenges, I'm proud to say that we balanced our budget and got unanimous approval from our Board of Commissioners. In addition to passing the budget, we passed a plan to reduce the sales tax by 0.25% in 2012 and 0.25% in 2013, entirely eliminating the sales tax increase that was enacted in 2008, a campaign pledge. My 2011 budget reaffirms my commitment to fiscal responsibility, and it's a commitment I'm determined to keep. Our residents want a new direction for the county, and clearly it starts with being fiscally responsible. I know that what people expected is that we would make hard decisions and tough choices, and we have. You know, we're emerging from, or hopefully emerging, from the worst economic conditions in 70 years since the Great Depression. And as a history teacher, needless to say, I find this very, very troubling. And you know, I want to credit the president. It's very hard to be in a situation where you've prevented us from falling off the cliff. You know, you don't quite get the same credit as Roosevelt, for example. You're already at the bottom of the cliff, and everybody understands that, and Roosevelt's trying to get us back up. But if you're in a position where you've prevented the country from falling off the cliff, you don't get quite the same credit. But these are very tough times, and it's particularly tough times for government, because if the economy has collapsed, not only have our resources declined, but the demand for services has gone up dramatically. But nonetheless, we have a responsibility to balance the budget and to be fiscally responsible. And we're trying to professionalize the county to meet the commitments that we've made and to provide the services that we're obligated to provide. We brought a number of talented people on board, two of whom are here today. Maria Saldana is head of our... Did I do that right? All right. So I'm not a native Spanish speaker. I do my best. Maria is head of our Bureau of Economic Development. And Kurt Summers, who is our chief of staff. I'm very grateful to him for his willingness to join us from the cushy job that he had in the private sector. See, I did that to Maria once, and she got mad at me. But I'll say that about Kurt. You know, you can't run government by yourself. You got to be able to get good people to come and help. And in the past, the county government wasn't on the radar screen of good people. They were maybe attracted to city government or to state government, but the county was kind of way off in the wilderness. And we've been able to bring some very, very good people on board, not just Kurt and Maria, but Robin Kelly is our chief administrative officer. She was chief of staff to Alexei Junilius and was a candidate for state treasurer. Greg Wass was chief information officer for the state. He's come on board in a similar role in the county. Tarek Malhans, who had a number of responsible positions in city government, is now our chief financial officer. And Maria, who's here with us, is, as I said, head of our Bureau of Economic Development. And we recently brought on board a couple of, three actually new people. Andrea Gibson is our head of our budget office, and she was in the budget office in the city. Our director of human resources, Maureen O'Donnell, came to us again from the state. And finally, Michael Masters, who was chief of staff to Jody Weiss in the police department, has come on board to head up our homeland security operation. And full disclosure, there are two federal investigations of the county of which I'm aware, one of which is Homeland Security. The other, of course, is the... it used to be called the President's Office of Employment and Training. It's now called Cook County Works, which is one of Maria's headaches. So, part of our commitment to innovative and transparent leadership includes a plan to reform the process by which individuals are chosen to boards and commissions. And actually, I discovered that I have the responsibility for making appointments to 50 of these boards. Boards and commissions, sanitary and mosquito abatement districts. I mean, we don't have a tuberculosis district anymore, but just about everything else you can think of. I would ask you to give us a hand. Our website is cookcountyill.gov, and we're looking for people who would like to serve on the various boards and commissions to which I have appointments. And as I said, given the range of these boards and commissions, I could use some input from interested parties in the public. So take a look at our website, and if you know some folks who might be interested, please let us know. I always say that there's no greater honor than public service, and I'm grateful that so many good professionals have shared that view and come on board to help us. We've tried to be as transparent and accountable as we possibly can. We released our transition report on the first day in office, so that was December 6th. On March 16th, our 100th day in office, we released our 100-day report card, reported to the public on how we were doing on our initiatives. We're trying to put as much information about county government as we can on our website, and we ask you to give us your comments and feedback. Again, our website is cookcountyill.gov. I'm committed to professionalizing our work and our workforce. We're trying to do that with a bunch of pro bono partners. I want to express my appreciation of the Civic Consulting Alliance, which some of you in this room may be aware of. They have been a godsend to us, along with Kurt's network in the private sector. They have brought us a number of great companies to provide what Kurt estimates is $1 or $2 million, basically, of consulting help over the last 5 months that cost the taxpayers zero. In particular, we're grateful to Accenture that helped us at the beginning figure out the magnitude of the challenge we were facing financially, and the Boston Consulting Group, which has been working with us on performance management. McGladrey has done a desk audit for us in the president's office to kind of give us the handle on job titles and what people were actually doing, because we found there was a great discrepancy there. My favorite story is that everybody had a job title, not everybody had a job description, and virtually nobody had regular performance reviews. So, as I said, we had a lot to do in kind of basic management. We're trying to improve services, and of course, performance management is critical to improving services. You can't manage without measuring. As we were trying to put the budget together, we had a great deal of difficulty because nobody had any data on what they were doing. So if you're trying to make intelligent decisions about where you can make cuts and you don't know how people are measuring performance and therefore how well they're performing, it's very difficult. For example, we couldn't tell how much it cost us to fix potholes on our highways or the impact of funding cuts on various departments and agencies. We couldn't get the data to figure it out. Again, the Civic Consulting Alliance and Boston Consulting Group are critical to our efforts to improve performance through this performance management initiative, and we're taking the lead to try to be sure that every department and agency and elected official is accountable and that they're using your tax dollars well. We're providing training, additional resources and support to county agencies to drastically improve their performance management. We're holding all agencies, including the President's office, accountable by requiring them to do quarterly reports to establish measurable goals and detail their plans to meet those goals. So it may come as a surprise that there was no periodic effort to review progress and performance. Maybe not. But that's what we're trying to do. Quarterly reports, actually, we got the legislation passed through the Board of Commissioners, and it applies not just to my office, but to county government in its entirety. And on July 1st, we'll publish our first countywide performance management report. For the first time, the county will be able to report on what it's accomplished. The purpose of this report will be to hold our managers accountable to providing better services and using your tax money efficiently. It will focus on the services the county provides in four key areas: healthcare, that's our hospitals and healthcare system; public safety, our criminal justice system; property services; and fiscal administration. And going forward, we'll use this report to make important operational decisions based on the data collected. We're trying, as I said, to professionalize the county. Now, businesses, organizations, and municipalities have implemented similar programs around the country and have had great success in improving services to customers and residents. We need to reward those departments and teams that consistently innovate and excel and put new plans in place for others that are struggling. We need to be sure that taxpayers are getting their money's worth. Now, and let me just say, one of the things we've done is start some kind of contests. We had one for innovative ideas on how we can improve county government, and we had about, how many, 60? 60 submissions from county employees. We had an outside team of experts come in and review those suggestions, and then at one of the board meetings we acknowledged the winners and had a lot of interest, actually, and kind of competition among departments and agencies of who had the most ideas and who had the best ideas. So we're going to keep that up, do that every year, and encourage our employees to participate in our efforts to improve services. The county is primarily in the business of health care and criminal justice. That's where two-thirds of our money goes, two-thirds. A little more than a third to criminal justice, a little less than a third to health care. In the healthcare arena, I've been a longtime advocate of independent governance of our healthcare system. The Independent Governing Board was created in 2008 to provide independent oversight of our healthcare system, and it's proven to be effective at reducing costs and improving the quality and delivery of services in our healthcare system. However, we've got a big problem because in 2014, healthcare reform goes into effect, And our healthcare system historically has served as an option for those who had no other choice. It was the default, last resort arena of care. And more people are going to have health insurance in 2014. And the question for us is, will our healthcare system continue to attract patients under those circumstances? When people have a choice, will they choose the public system? Or will we be in a position where the county serves only those who've fallen through the social safety net and who don't have insurance, or the undocumented? And you may not be aware, but what I usually describe as a devil's bargain was made in passage of health care reform, and that is they excluded the undocumented. Now, we have a large undocumented population in Cook County. Most of you think that it's entirely people of Mexican-American origin, but in fact, our undocumented people come from all over the world, and they are not covered under health care reform. This is disgraceful. I am told that those who supported the plan felt that it was the only way they could get it passed, but it's nonetheless disgraceful. And our county system may be in the position where it serves, as I said, only those who have fallen through the social safety net and the undocumented for whom there is no reimbursement. So we'll have a health care system which provides service to those who desperately need it, but who bring no resources to the table with their care. So it makes it even harder for us to provide that care. So that's the challenge on healthcare. Are we going to be viable as healthcare reform goes into effect in 2014? On the criminal justice side, so I'm a teacher by profession. If you ask me, I will tell you. That's my profession. I'm a teacher. I got a temp job. Temp job in public life. And believe me, if you're in public life, you should never forget that it's a temp job. But so let me tell you how bad things are. So I'm a teacher. I taught high school for 10 years. In the city of Chicago, we graduate about 55% of our young people. 55%. We do a little better with the girls. It's about 64-65% of the girls, and about 45-46% of the boys. Now, a high school diploma is not simply your ticket into secondary, post-secondary education, into a trade school or a community college or a four-year college. It's also your ticket into the workforce, because employers use it as a screening device. After all, if you're an employer, are you going to pick somebody who dropped out of school as a freshman or sophomore or junior or whatever? Are you going to pick somebody who kind of stuck it out and did what was required and got a high school diploma? Well, the answer, I think, is that you're going to choose the person who graduated from high school. Okay? And we're failing. We're failing our young people because we can't figure out how to get them through school, especially our young men. Now, I always make a point of talking about how our schools are failing everybody, but they're particularly failing our young men. I was asked once by my daughter, you know, why I made such a point of this. I said, well, if you can't support yourself very well, you surely can't support your wife and family. So women have a real interest in the difficulties that we're having in this country educating our young men. And let me just say, when I was in college, it was disproportionate, so I'm 64, so it was a while ago, but when I was in college, disproportionately the young people in college were men. And now, in most of our colleges, even our very best colleges, it's disproportionately women. More than 50%, sometimes closer to 60% of the young people in college are women. So this failure to get our young men out of high school has ripple effects all the way up the educational ladder. We're not doing a very good job of educating our young people, period, however, and particularly our African-American and Latino young men. The graduation rates for African-American and Latino young men are closer to 40%. I mean, 60% don't graduate. And what I have said, to the chagrin, I'm sure, of Mayor-elect Manuel, the failures of our public education system feed our jails. And I'm responsible for the jails, and as I said, we're spending $500 million a year detaining people in the jail. 70% of the people in our jail, 70%, let me say that again, 70% are there for nonviolent offenses. They're there for low-level drug offenses, possession, not sale, possession. They're there for shoplifting, prostitution, driving under the influence, failure to pay their child support. So we're spending $500 million a year, and 70% of the people in jail are there for nonviolent offenses. I usually recommend at this point a book by Michelle Alexander, The New Jim Crow, Mass Incarceration in an Age of Colorblindness. Mass Incarceration in the Age of Colorblindness. I recommend it to all of you. If you go to the jail, it's disproportionately African-American and Latino young men. African-American and Latino young men. So we fail them in our public schools. We incarcerate them. If you have a felony conviction, it's very hard to get a job. After all, why would you hire a felon when you can hire somebody who hasn't had any encounters with the criminal justice system? We are making large numbers of our young African-American and Latino men unemployable. And that has devastating effects, not just on them and their families, but the communities out of which they come. Now, depending on who I talk to, sometimes I stress the devastation this causes to our communities, and sometimes I talk about the terrible cost it is to the taxpayers as a whole. So I've already given you my take on how that impacts individuals and families and communities. So let me just talk about the money for a minute. On a daily basis, we have an average of 8,500 people in the jail at a cost of $142 a day. Now, that works out to $45,000, $50,000 a year. For those of you who have young people in college, you know that's tuition to a very fine private university. So that's what we're spending to keep people in jail on a daily basis. And, of course, they get no services when they're in the jail. The sheriff, for example, has a small program. One of the things we're going to work on is alternate sentencing and options other than in detention in the jail for people who come in contact with the criminal justice system. The sheriff has a day reporting program. They come at 9, they leave at 4. They get drug treatment first and foremost, because the overwhelming majority of people who come in contact to our criminal justice system have substance abuse problems. It may not be the reason for their arrest, but it's one of the constellation of things that brings them into the criminal justice system. So they get drug treatment first and foremost. If they stay clean, they get education and training, and it costs $93 a day. So it's cheaper to deal with nonviolent offenders, help them with their substance abuse, help them with education and training. It's cheaper than having them sit in the jail at $142 a day, and yet our system is focused on putting people in jail. Now, I would argue that part of this is our own stupidity. The war on drugs has, in fact, been a war on communities of color. After all, my husband said, you know, one day, you know, what I don't understand is there were never any drug raids at the University of Chicago. And everybody knew who the drug dealers were. I could have told you. But the city police were never coming to my dorm to arrest those drug dealers. But they're everywhere in black and brown communities, not just here, but around the country. And that terrible war on drugs has been a war, as I said, on communities of color, because it's incarcerated large numbers of our young men, put them in a position, as I said, where they're virtually unemployable. And I attribute that, without apology, to stupidity and racism. My public affairs director winces whenever I do things like that. I love her dearly, and she has my best interests at heart, but, you know, the truth is the truth. As Cook County Board President, I will try to expand resources for alternatives to incarceration for nonviolent offenders, including treatment for addiction, educational classes, and life skills training. There are four reasons why we should do this. It decreases the number of people sitting in jail at a huge cost. It facilitates treatment and reentry services, reduces the number of repeat offenders. It frees up resources to devote to serious, violent criminals who are a harm to our community. We ought to save our jail space for the people who are beating people over the head and shooting people and raping people. They need to be in jail. I'm not arguing there aren't some people who need to be in jail. I'm just saying we have large numbers of people who don't need to be in jail, and we're wasting our money and destroying their lives. So in addition to our two traditional responsibilities, public health and public safety, we've decided to focus on economic development as well. In the past, the county wasn't much of a player in economic development. I talked to folks in the campaign trail from Metropolis 2020, from CMAP, Chicago Metropolitan Agency for Planning, from the Metropolitan Planning Council. They said that the county is never at the table. We get some participation from the city, but the county's never at the table. So we're going to change that. Maria has already begun to be involved in some of those organizations. And we've reorganized four departments. Cook County Works, which was formerly POET, that organization entity that's under federal investigation. Community development, capital planning, building, and zoning. We hope that the consolidation of these services helps to reduce costs and makes us more focused on economic development. I've long said that Chicago is the capital of the Midwest, and we want Cook County to be the economic hub of the Midwest. We're trying to work with business leaders to recruit and attract new industries. I've spoken before the Civic Committee, the Economics Club, the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce. We're trying to reach out to as many business organizations such as this one as we possibly can. I know there are lots of challenges ahead. We've made some progress, but we have a long way to go. I hope we'll continue to have your help and support. We're going to need your input, and surely we're going to need your participation. We've got a long way to go to have a county that provides for opportunity and innovation and demands responsibility and accountability, but we're on our way. We surely can't continue in the way in which we have proceeded in the past. We have to be careful with your money. We have to be accountable for the services we provide. We have to do better, and we will work to do better. Thank you.
Sure. We have the microphones. As you know, we're podcasting this, so if we could get those circulated. And please, if you have a question, speak into the microphone so we can have that. Mike?
Yes, President Preckwinkle. You've commented in the past about the number of governmental units, special service districts, et cetera, that exist in the state and the difficulty of managing those, assume effectiveness and ineffectiveness. Does the county see any role in addressing that?
So we live in the state that has the most units of government of any other state in the country. I can't remember, it's 11,000 or something. The next state is Pennsylvania, and it has like 5,000 or 6,000. So we in Illinois, because of our multiple layers of government, spend a lot more on government than people do elsewhere. I will tell you, however, that while that's a problem, it's not a problem that I can afford to deal with now. I got my plate full trying to deal with our challenges in our healthcare system, the challenges in our criminal justice system, and trying to be sure that the county is at least at the table and hopefully a player in economic development for our region. And I got lectured the other day by, what's the name of the organization, Kirk? Chicago Council on Global Affairs? Yeah. On how I ought to be thinking about the county as a player in Cook County as a entity in the global competition. So Chicago is a world-class city. This has to be a world-class county, and how can we promote competitiveness on the global stage? So with those things, I got my hands full, and I'm afraid somebody else is going to have to worry about the fact that we have 11,000 units of government in the state of Illinois. Why don't you stand up and yell?
President Preckwinkle, as a semi-follow-up to that question, Mayor-elect Emanuel the other day spoke about savings he hoped to accomplish by cooperation between the city and the county, perhaps even consolidating some functions. Could you comment on that?
Sure, I think that's a little bit different issue. That the question is, are there ways in which the city and the county can work together to save the taxpayers money? And I think there are lots of ways. You may have noted in the Tribune last week that there was a story about the city clinics, healthcare clinics, and the county healthcare clinics, and the possibility of having one unified healthcare system. That's been on the table for quite some time. But if you just think about purchasing, the county's budget is 3.1, the city's budget is about 6.2 billion. So together we're almost 10 billion, and the kind of economies of scale that we could achieve if we did more joint purchasing, for example, are significant. So there, I think there are a lot of opportunities for us to work together and collaborate, and Mayor Emanuel has said that's in his interest, and it's surely in our interest in the county side.
Thank you for your comments, President Pekwinkle, about economic development and the county's role in it. I think that as municipalities who are working to attract investment to our communities and are competing with Lake County and some of the other collar counties, we have used the 6B program to be pretty extensively and found it to be fairly effective. What are your thoughts about extending that to 7A and 7B to attract other types of investment?
Do you want to comment, Marie? Good.
We'd be happy. As President Pekwinkle mentioned, the county and the Department of Community Development and Planning has not been at the table when it comes to economic development incentives. We are looking to those programs and try to see if we can refine them, extend them. Of course, we're all about making sure that we attract businesses to our, especially suburban, in the suburban Cook County areas.
Good morning. Unless I'm mistaken, the Cook County Forest Preserve is the largest donor of real estate in Cook County. Can you speak briefly about any plans for improvement of both the physical properties as well as services?
Sure. So there's this kind of unusual circumstance. The president of the county board and the Cook County Board of Commissioners are responsible for the executive and the legislative branches, both of the county and of the Forest Preserve. So I am president of the Forest Preserve District in addition to being president of the county board. I know there are some advocates who lobbied for an independent Forest Preserve District, but since we already have more units of government than any place else in the country, I didn't think that was such a good idea. And what I said to them was, I'm not going to do this. We're going to try good governance before we think about having an independently elected Forest Preserve District. What I didn't know, and you may know, is that 10 or 11% of the land in Cook County is in forest preserves, mostly in a ring around the city. And as my husband, who's a science teacher, says, we have the most ecological diversity in Cook County than any place else in the state. Let me say that again. We have the most ecological diversity in Cook County than any place else in the state. And it's in large part because of the forest preserves. Illinois is a big farming state, right? And most of the farmland is monoculture, so it's not surprising, if you think about it, that we have such great diversity here. We're also in the southwestern part of the Great Lakes Basin, where a number of climate zones come together. So we have, you know, prairie and woodland and whatever. We also have great diversity of animal and plant species. So one of the first things I did was bring in a very talented person by the name of Arnold Randall, who I knew from the city, who'd worked for the Park District for about a decade and then was Commissioner of Planning for a while and worked for the 2016 Olympic Committee, to be our superintendent of our forest preserves. And Mary Laraya, who some of you may know from the Metropolitan Planning Council and from her days in banking at LaSalle, community banking at LaSalle, came in to be the deputy superintendent. So I brought a very good team in. They've been scouring the community to try to find good people to come and work in the forest preserves. So we're committed to restoring the forest preserves to a first-rate institution. And I think Arnold and Mary have made a good start. So we're, as I said, we're trying to find talented people who are willing to come. And I know it's a personal and financial sacrifice, but come and work in government to help us turn things around.
Yes. There's been a lot in the news lately about the use of financial incentives in economic development, and recently with Sears coming back and asking for all sorts of money. I'm wondering what the county's and your position is on this.
Well, I think we have to be careful, because 10 years ago, Sears got a lot of incentives to stay in Cook County, stay in our region, and as soon as the 10-year period was up, they're back at the trough wanting more incentives. I think we need, you know, cost-benefit analysis of the public subsidy that's given to them and what the potential return is to the public. I guess I'd say I'm very wary of these extortion efforts. We'll have to look at I'd have to look at it more closely to see what I think about it, but I find this sort of, I suppose it's understandable from a business point of view that you should try to play off different parts of the country as you look at location decisions and extract as much in terms of concessions as you can from local government, but there's something contemptible about it.
Can I make a comment?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, we would like to keep Sears in Cook County, but that's right.
Thank you, Maria.
But we do have to be cautious about these border wars and people just wanting, you know, more and more money. I think creating a friendly business environment and getting ahead of these companies before they reach this level is what we have to do. So I'm all for and have a plan to reach out to the major companies that are located, especially in suburban Cook County, so we can meet with them well ahead of time before they develop plans to go locate somewhere else.
We have time for one more question, and then we'll wrap things up.
Great. President Perkwinkle, I don't have a question. I just want to say thanks for all of your hard work and dedication and that of your staff and talented people that you brought on and your consciousness, and you're willing to fight the good fight and, you know, make the hard decisions. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.